The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. Today is Tuesday, August the 26th, 2025. It is 10:10 a.m. in London, UK. It is 11:10 a.m. in Cape Town, South Africa, where my good friend Dr. Peter Hammond is. So let's bring him up right now. Peter, are you with us?
Yes, Andrew. Thank you so much. Good morning.
Thank you, Peter. Good morning to you. And a couple of notes for you, ladies and gentlemen. You may have noticed in some of the recent shows with Peter that occasionally there's a dropout on the audio. Now, that is actually my fault. What's been happening is that since Skype closed, we've gone to a different recording medium. Now, when Peter says something and I need to look something up for a show post or for a question later in the show, what have you, sometimes when you do that, it causes a problem with the audio, which is very frustrating. So I apologise about that. I'm now running two computers. So if I do need to look something up during the show, then I'll be looking it up on the other computer. So there should be no dropout. And I forgot what the other thing was. So, well, it's the show title. The show title is The Real Story of King Alfred the Great. So, Peter, where would you like to start us off with today's topic?
Well, Andrew, we always need inspiration and encouragement, and there's so much to learn from history, and it doesn't matter where we are in our history, we can benefit from learning from other people's experiences in history, and this is one of the great shining lights in our history. King Alfred of Wessex spent most of his life fighting against the invading Danes, the Vikings, and he's the only king in English history to be known as the Great. His reign has been recognized one of the most important turning points in English history, politically and ecclesiastical history. He lived through tumultuous times, and he's recognized as one of the most intelligent, devout, industrious, and one of the most effective of all the medieval monarchs. And Alfred was both a soldier and a scholar. He was a lawmaker and an educator. He is an author and a reformer. I often call King Alfred the Great the Reformer King. And Alfred was born the fourth son of Aethelwulf and Osberth at Wantage in 849. I've been to the town of Wantage, seen his monument there. A very impressive monument of him standing with a scroll in his left hand and a battle axe in his right hand. And powerful image of a very powerful man. His mother taught him a love for knowledge, and at a very young age, he responded to a challenge that whichever one of her children first learned to read a beautifully illustrated Saxon book on poetry would have it for his own. And Alfred dedicated himself to the task, and he won the prize. And this was characteristic of Alfred's lifelong love for literature, his hunger for knowledge, and his passion for advancing English literature. As the fourth son of the king, it wasn't expected that Alfred would ever come to rule. However, the death of all three of his older brothers in battle against the invading Vikings or the Danes propelled Alfred to the throne. He would have been happy to have spent his life as a scholar or a monk, but he was propelled to the throne at age, he was 30 years, he is the King of England. So he was the soldier king who led his people in a desperate war for survival. and Alfred personally commanded in 54 pitched battles, frequently fighting against overwhelming odds against the previously unbeaten Vikings. And it's a tribute to Alfred that he inflicted the first serious defeats upon the Vikings. And he fought 9 pitched battles against the Danish Vikings. And Alfred was defeated at Reading. And a few days later, he turned this defeat into victory at Ashdown. And the Battle of Ashdown in January 874 was critically important. And Winston Churchill described it in his History of the English-Speaking Peoples: if the West Saxons had been beaten, all England would have sunk into heathen anarchy. And since they were victorious, hope still burned for a civilized Christian existence in this island. This was the first time the invaders had been beaten in the field. And this was followed by an inconclusive battle at Basing, and this was followed by a defeat at Marton. And it was at this battle that Alfred's brother Æthelred died, and Alfred succeeded to the throne. And shortly after this, he fought the Danes to a standstill at Wilton, and the result of that battle was indecisive. So Alfred and his men of Wessex proved too stubborn a foe for easy subjugation, so the resistance secured 5 uneasy years of peace in which they could consolidate the resistance. And in the uneasy peace that followed, Alfred reorganized his army and started to rebuild the realm, which had suffered under the merciless ravages of these Danish Vikings. And many towns and villages were raided and plundered, and London had long ago fallen to the Danes, and Northumbria and East Anglia were firmly under Danish control. Wessex, the kingdom of the West Saxons, was effectively the last holdout in the British Isles against the Danes or the Vikings. And Alfred realized it was vital to create a navy to defend England effectively from the seafaring Danes. When you're fighting a seafaring people like the Vikings, obviously you need a navy to get them and keep them away from the shore before they land. So to be safe in Ireland, it's essential to command the sea. So Alfred contracted Frisian seamen to build a fleet superior to anything that had been seen before. And for building up the English navy from very small beginnings, Alfred has justly been called the father of the Royal Navy, which is true. Alfred also instilled a great respect for law and order in his kingdom. And it was said that a traveler might hang a valuable jewel on a bush by the roadside and nobody would dare touch it. And Alfred brought scholars from Europe in order to help educate his people. He was determined to give his nation a stable system of laws based upon God's law. And he blended the Mosaic law with the Sermon on the Mount and Germanic customs. And Alfred's dooms began with the 10 commands: I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the house of bondage, out of the house of slavery in Egypt. You are to have no other gods before you. And the whole of the 10 commands as given in Exodus 20. And this was followed by other case laws of the law of Moses from Exodus, the golden rule of Christ to do to others as you'd want to be done unto, and other biblical principles, especially drawn from the Sermon on the Mount. And those were the dooms of King Alfred, or the common law of England, called the common law because it was common to all classes. It applied to whether you were the ruling class or the peasants. And in 876, the Danes launched a surprise offensive, seizing Warham, and they besieged and took Exeter, and rounded by sea, landed in Devon, and they besieged Kenrith castles. They captured Kenrith, where they put all the inhabitants to the sword. And Alfred was defeated at the Battle of Chippenham, and he was forced to retreat. So Wessex seemed to be in danger of falling under the shadow of Odin's bird, the great raven which the Danes took as their symbol. Odin's bird, the raven. And Alfred's defeated forces withdrew to the Isle of Athelney amidst the forests and marshes of Somerset. And it's here that the very well-known event of Alfred burning the housewife's cakes took place. It's funny, there's so many things Alfred achieved, but about the only thing we get taught in school about Alfred is that he burned the cakes. You know, it's something very trivial, but it somehow entered into the public consciousness that here he was seeking shelter while on the move and in disguise. The king was asked by his host to watch her cakes, which were being baked. And absorbed in thought and planning his strategies to counterattack the Danes, Alfred failed to notice the blackened cakes he was meant to be watching. I think many men have had that experience that we fail in the kitchen, and he was berated by the irate housewife when he returned. And apparently she even brought the broom down on him. The woman obviously didn't know that this was the king, but, you know, it's a funny anecdote, but you can imagine a poor guy being heavily distracted at a time like that. But, you know, women don't forget when men fail like that and let the cakes burn. So after reorganizing his forces, Alfred surprised the Danes after force marching his soldiers at up to 40 miles a day. Now, I've marched 70 kilometers in a single day as a missionary up in the Nuba Mountains with a heavy pack and so on. So I know how hard that is. But for soldiers to move at that distance, 40 miles in a day, that's exceedingly difficult, especially when you think of the kit they've got to wear, and they're carrying heavy shields and armor and helmets and all of this. So the area is still known as Slaughterford. On a hillside above this decisive battlefield, there's now a great white horse, which Alfred had cut out to commemorate his major victory. And Alfred forced King Guthrum of the Danes, along with 30 of his earls, to be baptized as Christians. So these were the first Viking converts to Christianity. Instead of putting his defeated enemies to the sword, Alfred preferred to live at peace with them, but he said, I can't trust your word if you're heathens, you must be converted to Christianity. So King Guthrum and his 30 earls had to go through catechism, they had to be discipled in the principles of the Christian faith, memorized the Lord's Prayer and the Apostles' Creed, and they were baptized. And this marks a major turning point, the beginning of the conversion of the brutal Vikings to Christianity. And you can see the testimony of it today. Every Viking country has the cross in their flag, Denmark being the first, and later Norway and Sweden and Finland, Iceland. All the Viking countries end up with crosses in their flags as a permanent testimony to how the bloodthirsty Vikings were converted to Christ. And it all started with King Alfred. He converted his defeated enemies. And the Danes withdrew from Alfred's territory, Wessex, until 884, when they attempted another invasion. But this time, Alfred gained a swift victory and seized London in 885, fortifying it strongly. And thereafter, Alfred received the submission of other leaders of the Angles and the Saxons, and from several of the princes of Wales. And at this point, Alfred became the first true king of all of England. So he is the great for many reasons. He is the founder of the Royal Navy. He was the first king to be able to defeat the Vikings. And so he began to become the king of all of the different tribes and regions of England. And in 892, a large invasion of Danes was met in battle, and Alfred defeated the invaders at Farnham. That was in 893. And again at Thorney and Benfleet, he outmaneuvered and outfought them. And hearing of a second Danish army besieging Exeter, he forced marched his army overland and drove out the besiegers. And at this point, his newly formed English navy attacked the galleys of the invading Danes at sea and actually defeated them. To defeat Vikings at sea was a very impressive milestone. And as a large number of Danes marched up the Thames Valley, there were numerous furious battles, and the Danish garrison at Chester was besieged and forced to retreat in 894. So to prevent the Danes from resupplying their forces, Alfred obstructed the Thames River and put barriers across the Thames River, forcing the Danes to withdraw when they couldn't get resupply. And by 896, he had driven all the invaders out of his kingdom. And through virtue and valor, through tactics and tenacity, Alfred fought the Viking invaders to a standstill, turned them back out of the country, and succeeded in uniting the fragmented dominions of England against a common foe. And his Christian courage was an inspiration to all. And Alfred enjoyed over 32 years in marriage to Ealhswith of the royal family of Mercia, and they raised three daughters and two sons. And his son Edward and his daughter Ethelfrida, the Lady of the Mercians, together defeated the Danes and liberated all of England. Now, having rescued his country from invasion, he set to work reforming the laws, the customs, and the culture of his people, personally translating many Latin works into Anglo-Saxon so the English people could read them. And amongst Alfred's many translation projects were Bede's Ecclesiastical History, and the Venerable Bede, by the way, is the first one to divide the calendar into BC and AD, and so made a major impact on the culture worldwide, so that most of the world today follows the Venerable Bede's calendar. And the Venerable Bede wrote the Ecclesiastical History, which is one of the most important histories of the Saxon peoples, and Orosius' Universal History, and Gregory's Pastoral Theology, and Aesop's Fables, and also Boethius' Consolation of Philosophy, and he translated the Psalms of David. So Alfred was also the author of a lot of original titles, including a book against unjust judges. I'm sure that would be appropriate even today, because I think we have unjust judges to this day for sure. And Alfred desired that every Englishman must learn to read and write. And so he devised a plan for the general education of people. Educating the nation was his pioneering contribution. He donated half of his personal wealth to church schools, to establish these church schools for the common people. And Alfred taught that for a kingdom to be effective, it needs men of prayer, men of war, and men of work. And the men of prayer, of course, are the church people, the men of war are the soldiers, and the men of work are the common hardworking citizens who pay the taxes and enable everything else to function as well. And Alfred insisted all his nobles must learn to read, and they must learn the great history and heritage of Christendom. So King Alfred wrote, local governments ought to be synonymous with both local Christian virtue, otherwise it becomes local tyranny, local corruption, and local iniquity. So government leaders, right down to municipality level, and the mayors and the councillors, they all need to be men of prayer, men of virtue, men of God's word. And Alfred was very concerned for the poor and needy, so he founded two monasteries and a lot of schools in order to care for foreigners and strangers, and he allocated 1/8 of his revenue to the poor and to the needy. He instituted a system of fortified posts or burghs and established a national militia, the Fyrd, ensuring that the common people were armed, trained, and organized for local defense. He enlarged and improved the English fleets of the Royal Navy. He entrenched and enforced the law of God as the common law of England, which is the first foundational law for all of English society, called the common law because common to all, and based on the Ten Commandments of Moses and the Sermon on the Mount of Christ. And historians have noted that while the world has other examples of kings who have been great generals or great magistrates, no other sovereign did more in battle or in rulemaking or in forming and developing the literature and the education of his people, as well as working for the spiritual benefit of both his subjects and his enemies. King Alfred stands head and shoulders above all else in those categories. And Winston Churchill marveled that Alfred could have wished to convert his savage foes. This sublime power to rise above the whole force of circumstances, to remain unbiased by the extremes of victory or defeat, to persevere in the teeth of disaster, to greet returning fortune with a cool eye, to have faith in men even after repeated betrayals, this raises Alfred far above the turmoil of the barbaric wars to his pinnacle of deathless victory. And Edmund Burke wrote of Alfred, "One cannot help being amazed that a prince who lived in such turbulent times, who commanded personally in 54 pitched battles, who had so disordered a realm to regulate, that he was not only a legislator but a judge, and who was continually superintending his armies, his navy, and the traffic of his kingdom, his revenues, and the conduct of all his officers, that he could have bestowed so much of his time on religious exercises and speculative knowledge. But the exertion of all his faculties and virtues seemed to have given multiplied strength to all of them." And King Alfred stands out as the model king, probably the greatest king Britain's ever had. He is the perfect knight, chivalrous, a dedicated Christian, a Protestant before the Reformation, a soldier and a scholar, a lawmaker and an educator, an author and a reformer. He successfully fought against spiritual decay within the English church, as well as against the Viking invaders. He created the first English navy, authored the first English literature, ensured the survival of Christianity in England, and began the process of converting the bloodthirsty Viking invaders to Christianity. And so King Alfred really stands out as a phenomenal inspiration. And By the way, he believed he was descended from King David, and later Queen Victoria sponsored a genealogy to be determined where her ancestors came from. And Queen Victoria's ancestry was seen to flow through King Alfred the Great and going all the way back to King David in the Bible. So interesting, in the book Coronation, which is a beautiful, big, full-color coffee table book, well illustrated, it's got the whole genealogy of Queen Victoria going back through Alfred to King David. So King David wrote Psalm 144, "Blessed be the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle, my loving kindness and my fortress, my high tower, my deliverer, my shield, the one in whom I take refuge, who subdues the people under me. Stretch out your hand from above, rescue and deliver me out of great waters. Deliver me from the hand of the foreigners, from the one who, you are the one who brings salvation to kings. You delivered David, your servant, from deadly sword. Blessed are the people whose God is the Lord." So that's Psalm 144, was written by David and could just as well be applied to King David's worthy son, King Alfred the Great. And this soldier and scholar, this lawmaker and educator, this author and reformer, King Alfred really was the model Christian knight who throughout the rest of the Middle Ages was an inspiration and a phenomenal example. I think in these days, we need to remember the importance of education, the importance of security and defense, the importance of caring for the poor and the needy, and the whole nation needs to be educated. Education is so foundational. To have had a king who had such love of literature, such a love for the word of God, and to have provided so much for his people at the worst of times, when he's being attacked on all sides, and literally the British Isles were being swamped by the Viking invaders, the Norsemen. There was even the prayer in the prayer book at that stage that, you know, deliver us from the fury of the Norsemen. And he lived at that time. And to think that he not only managed to defeat the Vikings, but he managed to begin the conversion of the Vikings, which is a tremendous blessing, because today you look at the Scandinavian Nordic countries and they've all got the Christian flag and they're some of the most peaceful societies on earth. And to think there was a time that they were once the most violent and savage of all the peoples of Europe were the Vikings, and today Scandinavia is as peaceful as you can imagine any countries to be. And that just shows the fruit of the gospel and law and order. So it would be good to go back to look at the common law of England, the dooms of King Alfred, and to see how we might build our society again on these great principles. I'm sure if King Alfred was to speak to us today, he would point us to 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then when I hear from heaven, I will forgive their sin and I will heal their land. We've got a hymn in our frontline hymn book down here, which is 1,100 years old. Dates back to the 9th century, King Alfred's battle hymn, "When the Enemy Comes In Like a Flood." And it's a really rousing hymn, sung like galloping horses. But we often sing King Alfred's battle hymn here at our mission in Cape Town, South Africa. And we look to King Alfred as our spiritual father. Now, my original ancestors, the Hammonds, were Vikings, Danes, who invaded England back in these days. And so although King Alfred was the enemy of my physical ancestors, he's our spiritual father as well, because he brought these savage Vikings, including my original ancestors, to Christ. The name Hammond came from the hammer of Thor. Our original ancestors would have been drinking the blood of their enemies out of skulls. They were quite a savage people. But although at one time the Hammonds would have been the enemies of King Alfred, he didn't just defeat the Vikings, he converted them. And what an incredible challenge to not just be able to defeat your enemies, but to be more than a conqueror, which of course is what Christ calls us to do. That just like David was a great conqueror. David slaughtered Goliath, the great giant Philistine. And yet Jesus is more than a conqueror. He took Saul of Tarsus, the enemy of the church, and turned him into the evangelist church. He took the persecutor of the church and turned him into an apostle of the church. And so the conversion of Saul into Paul of Tarsus is just another example of how we can be more than conquerors. What a wonderful call if we would see this challenge of Alfred, that instead of just defeating enemies, which is often necessary for survival, but to work at evangelizing and converting enemies, bringing our enemies to Christ. That is a great legacy of King Alfred. And so if we appreciate schools and the common law, we should look again at the matchless life and example of King Alfred the Great, the reformer king. Back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. Now, it's interesting because you talked about the links to King David, and I was reminded of, there's a couple of books. They're by a guy called W.H. Bennett, and the first one is The Story of Celto-Saxon Israel, and the other one is Symbols of Celto-Saxon Israel. And they were very useful study tools for me. Certainly the second one, I don't know if I actually have a copy of The Story of Celto-Saxon Israel, but it is on Amazon.co.uk and presumably on Amazon.com as well, because I have opened it up and I can see a review here, which is top reviews from other countries. It's the second one down by Blucher, B-L-U-C-H-E-R, reviewed in the United States on 12th of October 2020. The title is, For Those Seeing Truth, Not Politically Correct Nonsense About Antichrist as Chosen People. A well-written book, the copy arrived in excellent condition. Despite being described as used, it didn't look like it had been opened, a shame as this info is sorely needed today. The scriptures, especially prophecy, make perfect sense once you know who the people of the book are in today's world. Nobody else but the northern plus western European people match the prophecies, promises, blessings, curses, or tribal markings given unto Israel, the people, not the country. Keeping in mind Israel was to be a company of nations, not one, not called not his people, Hosea chapter 1, and be as numerous than the sands of the sea, not the world's smallest people. Wherever scattered, those there would be made a full end, Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 11, and be Yahweh's battle axe against the nations and kingdoms of this world, Jeremiah 51, 20, not kicked out of everywhere they've ever lived. A must read for anyone who takes the Bible seriously and wants to know more about connections between the peoples of the book and those populating the earth today. Suggestion: ask our Father in heaven for guidance from the Holy Spirit before reading this book. This material is not like any other in this world. It can be hidden in plain sight without help uncovering it from above. God bless all who seek truth outside of today's 501c3 corporate churches, brackets beast system, and the modern Baal priests who deceive the masses for profit. So any comments on that, Peter?
Yes, I found it most convincing when I've looked into the studies and evidence that indeed the Saxons are Isaac's sons, and that the British Isles have some of the so-called lost tribes of Israel, as do a lot of the Saxons of Northern Europe and even the Danes. And in fact, the Danes, you could see the connection of Denmark with the Danube, the tribe of Dan. And even the prophecies about Dan is, you know, being people of the sea and masters of ships and great explorers. There's so many prophecies of the so-called lost tribes of Israel, the northern tribes that were exiled by Assyria, and they went by way of the Caucasian mountains, which also interesting that our people often called Caucasian, because obviously came from the Caucasus mountains, which is where the Assyrians who conquered northern Israel exiled them to. And there's so many examples, like when the prophecy was that you will be called great and you'll be a company of nations, and there's so many prophecies, you know, being a blessing to the nations. Well, who's blessed the nations with more missionaries or more Bibles? than the British people. And you can see that the Anglo-Saxons have the hallmarks of what was prophesied of the children of Abraham, and especially to be a blessing to the nations through the Reformation, through the great missionary movement, especially the 19th century, the nation that did the most to take the gospel to the four corners of the earth were really the Anglo-Saxon peoples. And it's an intriguing thing, since the days of William Carey, the father of modern missions, English speakers have made up 90% of the world missionary task force. And that's phenomenal, because it wasn't that long ago, 500 years ago, there were only about 3 million people in the whole world who spoke English. Now English is one of the main languages of the world. And it's, if not the first language, it's the second language of a massive amount of the world's population. But just looking at biblical prophecies, anyone who wants to look at it would find a lot of evidence that, in fact, the Scandinavian and the Saxons and the Angles have the hallmarks of the true children of Israel, the so-called 10 lost tribes. I mean, where else did they go? And they fulfilled their biblical prophecies, especially being a blessing to the nations, to all the families of the nations. And King Alfred played a key role in that. So those are good sources to go to, and I recommend anyone who's interested in identifying the people of God who were scattered, and I think they'll come to the same conclusion.
Thank you, Peter. Yes, it's the other book, it is on amazon.co.uk. Well, there's a page for it, but I don't believe that there are any copies available. I remember when I got hold of a copy, it was quite difficult. I had to pay quite a lot for it, and it wasn't in the best condition. An example of this is a review from just as Amazon customer in the United Kingdom on 25th of November 2012, Our Authenticated Origin, a great exposition of the origin of our national heraldic emblems. The colour plates are very revealing. The whole work is well documented and very easy to read and completely convincing. I first read a loaned copy around 1970 and have finally managed to obtain my own copy and am delighted. But there's something else that goes into... All these reviews are quite short, but... this one is entitled Fantastic Publication from the United States on 26th December 2012 by Richard A. Ogden. For students of the Bible who are curious about the 10 lost tribes, this is an excellent resource. The symbols for the 12 tribes of Israel are associated with the symbols of Celto-Saxons. A great read. And that leads me into some of the tribes are easier to track than others. For example, Denmark was Danmark, i.e. the Mark of Dan, and that is where the tribe of Dan apparently settled. And of course, that's also the Vikings. And I understand the tribe of Dan in the Bible, Peter, weren't necessarily the most peaceful of people, so that might indicate the sort of Viking heritage there. What could you tell us about that?
Yes, it's true. And I mean, Dan has quite a checkered history and brutal indeed, as we read in the book of Judges in particular. And yes, so you just look at the Danube, which explains it would have been the pathway if you're coming from the Caucasian Mountains and traveling around the Black Sea and heading into northwestern Europe, the Danube would be the route, the Danube Valley, the route that they would have probably traveled along. And so the land of Dan or Danmark and the Danube River, and even you think of the Dnieper River in Russia, it sort of indicates in which direction the children of Israel would have been migrating. And the fact that these nations uniformly received the gospel and became great missionary nations sending out the gospel of later, you can see the fulfillment of the prophecies given through both Abraham and through Isaac. And so the Saxons, in many ways, are Isaac's sons. You can see how that would have changed over the years, Isaac's sons morphing into Saxons. And the etymology of the word gives you another clue. But this is what Queen Victoria believed and what she found as well when she had her historian study her genealogy that they could trace a direct line from her all the way through Alfred to King David. So that's pretty convincing. Back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. Yes, certainly. That's something that I discovered a few years ago, and I indeed wrote about in my second book. Really astonishing to know, but it's only astonishing because you've been misled, you know, as to who's who. When you actually think about it, like you were going through earlier about, you know, all these different... Abraham was going to be a father of many nations. And you start to sort of track, well, who could that be? And then you look at all these other things like spreading the word of God around the world, and you talk about the missionaries and all that sort of thing. What can you tell us about, as we've got a little bit of time left, your book, The Greatest Century of Missions? I think that that would be nice to have some sort of information about that, Peter.
Yes, so I did my doctoral thesis on what inspired the greatest century of missions, or the greatest century of Christian advance, which was the 19th century, from 1800 to 1901, the greatest century of missions, I called it. And then I produced this book out of the doctoral thesis I did, and made a more popular presentation with having 19 biographies of the 19 missionaries of the greatest century of missions, the 19th century. And it includes studies on, of course, William Carey and Robert Moffat, David Livingston, Hudson Taylor, C.T. Studd, all these phenomenal missionaries, Mary Slessor. It's absolutely inspiring to see the greatest missionaries of the greatest century of Christian advance, and almost all of them coming from the British Isles, Anglo-Saxons, Scots, and just an amazing testimonial to how God used a particular people, his people, scattered in the faraway isles at what would have been the uttermost ends of the earth at one stage, to take the gospel to the uttermost parts of the earth, including strong Christian, not just enclaves, but strongholds in New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, Rhodesia, to Canada, all over the world, literally to the islands of the cannibals in the Pacific, into the deepest jungles of Africa, Borneo. So an amazing testimony of how in one century Christianity became a truly international religion. And it was accomplished by these people who obviously have these roots as God's people, going all the way back to Abraham, to be a blessing to all the families of the nations. And so that book's actually been one of our bestsellers, super popular. It's had three printings. It's been revised really twice. And at one point, I was asked by a German missionary based in East Africa if they could print 10,000 copies of my Greatest Century of Missions book, and if I'd waive royalties and so on. Of course we did. He wanted to put a copy in the hands of every pastor, and especially youth pastor, in East Africa. That's across Uganda, Tanzania, and Kenya. And I was invited on a speaking tour to universities in East Africa to help promote the book. And that was a 10,000 print run just in East Africa. But the Greatest Century of Missions has been very popular with homeschoolers, and there are Bible colleges that use it as a textbook as well, because there's no better way of learning than from examples of excellence. So the Greatest Century of Missions is a well-illustrated book with 19 biographies of the 19 greatest missionaries of the Greatest Century of Missions. And that, I think, has been one of the most popular books to teach missions, because it's one thing to teach the theory, but to teach the practice of examples of excellence who went out and who transformed tribes and nations and brought an end to the slave trade in Africa, who brought an end to intertribal genocides and cannibalism. Just an extraordinary achievement of what a handful of people did. And a plucky little Scots girl, Mary Slessor, who went to Nigeria and ended the killing of twins and adopted and saved many people, fought the slave traders. Yeah, I mean, Mary Slessor, what a character. There she was writing back home saying, send me a Maxim machine gun. We've got slave traders still working here. I mean, can you imagine any missionary calling for an advanced weapon like a Maxim machine gun was the most powerful weapon of its time? And here you've got this little barefooted missionary in Nigeria who's such a battle axe that she's wanting to set free the captives and end slave trade, asking for Maxim machine guns. I don't know how many churches would respond positively with that kind of missionary prayer letter request today. But they were such amazing characters, and I found extraordinary studying these examples and then putting them to print with a lot of illustrations, well illustrated pictures of the extraordinary people that God used to transform the world in the 19th century. And we've got to know our history, and we must appreciate it and learn from it. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. And that book, ladies and gentlemen, the best place to look, rather than put a direct link in the post for the show, if you go to the bottom of the links I have for Peter, which is to the Christian Liberty Books website, you just click on that and you just scroll down until you see a window just about halfway down, print on demand books, and you can see there, and you just click the image and that takes you to the bookstore. And that is something that it'll probably get you the fastest delivery and the most reasonable price. Would you recommend that being the way to get that book, Peter?
Yes, christianlibertybooks.co.za. We started back 30 years ago in 1995 as a provision of homeschooling books and missionary books and books speaking up for the persecuted church. And so Christian Liberty Books has been a major provider of homeschool books and missions books. And that's one of our best sellers, The Greatest Century of Missions. It's so popular because it's so positive and it's so practical.
Yes, and after you click that link, then you go to the second page, and I would urge you to look at all the other books. If you've not read any of Peter's books before, I would certainly get a copy of Frontline as well, which is the biography, not just of Peter, but of Frontline Fellowship, and it's a fascinating book. You talked about the... when you talked about that missionary, Edith Slessor, and how people might be shocked today at what she said, it reminded me of the photo of you and four other pastors in Africa with machine guns, and you've had some criticism for that. Can you explain that to the audience, please, Peter?
Yes, indeed. So I was getting a picture of the chaplains that I trained up in South Sudan. I trained the first 70 chaplains for the Sudanese People's Liberation Army in Sudan, which is quite an achievement because these people used to have commissars and used to have red stars in their caps. And I don't know of any other revolutionary movement that got converted. They literally ditched their commissars and their red stars and they replaced them with chaplains. And I got the privilege of training the first 70 chaplains for the Sudanese People's Liberation Army, which is now the army of the independent South Sudan. And I was taking a picture of the first four graduates of our chaplaincy training program, and they were there in their camouflage uniforms with their clerical collars visible just behind their camouflage jackets, and they were each holding their AK-47 assault rifles. So I asked them, would you mind putting the rifles down by the tree so I can get a picture of you without them? And they laughed, and I said, the Christians in the West wouldn't understand you carrying rifles. And they laughed again, and they were still holding the rifles. So I said, pastors in the West don't carry rifles. And the response was, why not? I just thought, I don't think the people that I work amongst in the West would understand. But, you know, bear in mind that the churches in Sudan were being bombed. They've been rocketed. They've been strafed. I got bombed, rocketed, and strafed multiple times ministering in Sudan. They were getting ambushed. They were getting kidnapped. Pastors were being crucified. There was attacks on churches continually. Many of the members, even family members, were getting kidnapped and dragged away as slaves by the Arab Mujahideen. And so I was at a church, a Presbyterian church in North America, and when one of the pastors saw the pictures of the Sudanese Christians coming to church with rifles and even a tree just outside the church building with rifles, AK-47 assault rifles on, hung on branches and leaning against the tree stub. And he said, how can the Christians in Sudan carry rifles? And I said, well, they are targeted by a Mujahideen. They're being bombed by jihadists. Their children and family members are being kidnapped by slave traders. And then I said, have you noticed the picture at the entrance to your church? Because I'd noticed they had a famous picture that you've probably seen yourself of pilgrims going to church in North America, 1600s picture. You can see these pilgrims, and you know, they've got these English type of helmets of that time and on their hats, heads, and they're leading their wives and children through the snow and the forest going to church. And the men are carrying muskets. And when I said, your Christians used to come to church carrying muskets, and they were fined if they didn't come with a rifle because they were perceived to be irresponsible if they weren't providing for the protection of their family. And the pastor got confused, and he had to walk into his vestibule of his church to see the picture. He hadn't noticed that the people there were carrying rifles along with their Bibles and guiding their children through the snow on the way to church on Sunday. And that's a very famous a painting that I'm sure you've seen. So I think many of us have forgotten what it's like. I was at a point at a meeting with Brother Andrew of, you know, the God Smuggler from Netherlands, and he was being somewhat critical of the South Sudanese fighting for their independence. And I said, well, William of Orange, William the Silent, led the Netherlands to freedom against the Spanish. At one time, as Netherlands was a colony of Spain, in the 1500s, under Prince William of Orange, the Dutch people fought in order to achieve their independence. And Brother Andrew responded, but the Spanish were doing many atrocities, the Duke of Alva, burning churches, murdering Christians. And I said, no more than the jihadists are doing in Sudan today. And, you know, he had to stop for a moment thinking, that's true. So, you know, we might live in peaceful, stable countries where law and order is respected today and take it for granted. But we need to remember there were times in our past that our ancestors had to fight to protect us. I was at a old German Brethren church up in Indiana, in America, just a few months ago. And one of the people there said to me, it must be hard being a pacifist in Africa. And I responded, because the old German Brethren are very much like the Amish and the Mennonites in America. They're all pacifists. And I said, it's impossible. I said, you can be a pacifist in Indiana because you're surrounded by oceans and by army and police protecting you. But I said, we cannot be pacifists in Africa. We literally have to be ready at a moment's notice to protect our congregation, our family members, and our neighbors from violent attack and even slave traders. And you know, they stopped and had to look for a while, a bit confused. But I don't think we understand what it's like living in a place where you could be attacked and burned alive. You can be hacked to death. You could be hung, crucified at a moment's notice. And you've got to be ready to protect your family. As the Bible says, 1 Timothy 5 verse 9, if a man doesn't make provision for the members of his own household, he has denied the faith and he's worse than an infidel. So I'd say worse than animal. I don't know any animal that won't fight to protect its young. And so we shouldn't judge people in more dangerous areas than us for taking measures that our ancestors had to take to protect ourselves in the past. And it's strange, but still you have these people saying, why would pastors in Sudan carry rifles? Well, considering the government there wanted to have them crucified and burned alive, maybe we shouldn't be too judgmental of people who see it necessary to carry weapons. And similarly, David Livingston carried a double-barreled rifle and a six-barreled revolver when he is crossing the continent of Africa, confronting Arab slave traders and setting captives free. And so this little Scots lady, the red-headed Scots lady, Mary Slessor, asking for Maxim machine gun at the turn of the century may have sounded a bit extreme, but you know, if you lived in her environment in Nigeria, where there were slave traders and cannibals and all the rest operating, maybe we should not be too quick to judge others in very different situations that we can hardly imagine. So back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. And one thing that you brought up, Sudan, what we'll do, if you're happy, is we'll use that as the show image today, for those of you who haven't seen it, Peter with the pastors carrying rifles. And there I've been seeing that there's actually been some coverage. There's been some disturbances in Sudan at the moment. What can you tell us about the situation going on there at the moment?
The situation is somewhat volatile. Of course, South Sudan won its freedom and independence back in 2011. So since the 9th of July 2011, South Sudan has been recognized as an independent country separate from Sudan, which is in the north. And yet, Northern Sudan has had a civil war raging, which I think is another proxy war, because the Sudan government started to make arrangements and sign a treaty to allow the Russian Navy to use a port on the Red Sea in Sudan. And next thing you knew, that some rebels in Northern Sudan, so it's all Islamic Sudan North, rebels there, the rapid support forces started a civil war, and they are backed by the United States. So what you've got is a proxy war where Russians are backing one side, the government, and the American forces are, and that was started under Biden, started another civil war backing the rebels. So you've got a proxy war going on in Northern Sudan with some terrible atrocities. You know, sometimes even jets and artillery bombing civilian centers, even the cities, and hideous things taking place on the ground. So there's a very hideous civil war taking place in the north. Of course, for many years, there was a war between the north and the south, but the south won its independence as a result of that. And there's been a lot of destabilizing the south too, because they discovered oil in the south. And so now there are elements of the Sudan government, the Northern Sudan government, coming into South Sudan, causing grief and havoc and plainly targeting the oil-rich areas. So oil has complicated, and then the superpowers having their proxy wars has complicated more. And then just to make it even more difficult, you've got Yemen, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia involved in backing their proxies in the civil war in Northern Sudan too. So it's quite a miserable situation, and Christians are often caught in the middle, and you've got all this fighting going on around them. And in some cases, Christians are caught in the crossfire or even the deliberate targets. So South Sudan still needs our prayers, and they still need support and help in every way. But it would be so nice if at some stage the US government could look at stretching their peacekeeping efforts to Sudan as well. I really hope and pray for peace in Sudan so the gospel can go forward. Back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. And that prayer is so important, especially to pray for your fellow people. How can I put it? I mean, the way I put it is in my prayer every day, I ask for protection for all fellow honest truth seekers throughout the world. And that would certainly, that's what my prayer for the people listening, the majority of them. I'm sure that there are some that don't fulfill that category, that are listening for other reasons. But basically, I think the majority, if they're here and they're listening, then they're real. They really are looking for the truth. So that being said, please remember your fellow listeners in your prayers as well. And Peter, anything further you'd like to close out the show with, and then please let the audience know where they can find your work and how they can contact you.
Yes, thank you. So I've written about King Alfred the Great in another book called Victorious Christians Who Changed the World, which has got 31 biographies of great Christians through the last two millenniums. And it goes from Perpetua and St. Patrick and Columba all the way through to Charles Spurgeon and Mary Slessor. So it's a whole lot of biographies of great victorious Christians who are an inspiration in the world. And these books are all available as ebooks, as print on demand, and as hard copies from Christian Liberty Books. And the Christian Liberty Books website will give a link to both Lulu, who does the print on demand, and Smashwords, who does the ebooks. And I believe that they can be ordered through Amazon as well. Thank you, Andrew. Yes, so our website is www.frontlinemissionsa.org. Frontlinemissionsa.org. My personal email is peter@frontline.org.za, or CA, as I think Americans would pronounce it.
Thank you, Peter. And don't forget the other websites. Obviously, I mentioned the Christian Liberty Books website, but there are three more, I believe, in the post for our show. And I certainly found them to be a great resource when I got so much material for the Traditional Christian Message show was actually written by Peter that I read out, and I was going all over his websites to find it. So you find yourself a loose end sometimes. What should I look at? And things like that. Have a look at these different things and see what you can find there. There's great presentations, there's, you know, written works, there's videos, there's all sorts of stuff that is a wealth of information amongst all the sites that I have listed in the shows Peter and I do together. So that being said, I want to thank Peter for joining us today. I want to thank all of you for listening. Today's show has been The Real Story of King Alfred the Great, and then of course we delved into a lot of other topics as well. Peter and I are going to be back with you again next Tuesday. I'll be back with you all on Saturday. Until then, folks, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful week, and bye for now.